Why celebrate Easter in a Unitarian church? That's what many Christians around the world wonder every year at this time. For many of them, all Unitarian Universalists are atheists. Why celebrate a holiday in which you don't believe? Of course, their holiday is called Easter, which is another way of saying Ishtar, but that's another sermon. It's an excellent question of why we should celebrate Easter or how we should celebrate Easter. And to find an answer more satisfying than inertia, or to quote Woody Allen, because we need the eggs. You know, you have to really accept a Christian worldview to call yourself an atheist. Because that theist that Christians think they are, when you put an A in front of that, or a non-theist, basically what they're saying is, you don't believe in that God. You don't believe in that God. It makes no sense to a Buddhist to ask them whether or not they're an atheist, because they're not on that intellect, they're not in that conceptual framework. Certainly does no good to ask a Wiccan if they're atheist. You know. Also, you kind of have to be a Christian to be a Satanist. Because you have to accept the Christian worldview of Satan to worship him. For many of us, it's just beside the point. When I lived in North Carolina, people would ask me this time of year, basketball season, if I was a fan of North Carolina, the Tar Heels, or the Wolfpack, North Carolina State. Basically, they wanted to know if you were middle class or working class. I had to tell them I went to Vanderbilt. Ruling class. So everybody hated me. Also, in terms of this time of year, there can be the war of God language in Unitarian Universalist congregations. And you know, that's a war in the 40 years I've been preaching, I've never really fought. Frankly, I feel if you've got something to say, people will listen. And the language you use becomes secondary. And if you're having a battle over language in worship, it's because the congregation is not sufficiently engaged in what the minister is saying that they amuse themselves by arguing how it's being said. Though I will say that times when I've experienced, especially a Unitarian Universalist minister, using Christian language operationally, that is to say, offering a prayer to a personal God, it kind of makes me a little squirrely too. I wondered, why aren't you a Methodist? And I never used to see that until maybe about the last 10 years. And I think it's because the younger generation of Unitarian Universalists are so freed from the conventions of Christianity, they can use them better than my generation of ministers. It still makes some of us a little uncomfortable, though. We have to accept that some people have been wounded by the language of Christianity that was intended to heal. And we have to be respectful of those wounds, yet understand that it would be useful if those wounds did not stay forever open and unhealed. It's the same with our architecture, really, or the shape of our worship, the content of our liturgy. All these draw from a Christian tradition, even though this congregation has identified itself as humanist for many decades. Still, within this space, within this liturgy, within this tradition, I think there are at least three valid ways to appreciate Easter as history, as literature, and as psychology. Now, as history, I want to begin by thinking about something that happened in the generation after Jesus was said to have lived, at the time when the last people who would have been around during the time of Jesus were dying off. And this generation of believers thought that Jesus would come back again. They would see Jesus come back again. So as they were getting older and older, they were thinking, well, it must be pretty time because he's supposed to come back. And well, it wasn't happening so much. And they became to see more and more signs that he would be coming back again. Signs of the second coming. Signs of the apocalypse. And one of the primary signs was the sign of the beast. Right? The mark of the beast. 666. Sometimes called the Antichrist. You know what the main characteristic of the Antichrist was? He put his name on everything. It was when Nero put his image on coins that really annoyed the Jews and the Christians, because it was a kind of idolatry to them. Okay. More on this next week. Easter is a story in every generation about how to rise above oppression and imperialism and slavery. And everybody, I think, would appreciate Easter more if they also worship the whole week, from Monday, Thursday, through Good Friday, to the crucifixion. You just can't appreciate being resurrected quite as thoroughly if you weren't nailed to a cross 2 days before. It really goes together. It's suffering and salvation. It's death and redemption. Some of even Unitarian Universalists' favorite Christian hymns. We shall overcome, an amazing grace. Come out of this sense of salvation. And it's not only the image of Jesus to whom that salvation comes from. Joe Hill, the Wobbly, his song, the chorus, "I never died," said he. Joe Hill never died. Martin Luther King never died. Jesus never died. Their words and their example lives on. Christianity is the story of how a slave religion told the slaves that they were worthy and had value. Yet also, within 300 years, that religion empowering the slaves became the state religion of empire. The greatest act of cultural thievery in the history of Western civilization. You don't have to believe in resurrection to believe that the great spirits of the great teachers live on. Resurrection is literature. When I was in 11th grade, my teacher, Mrs. Wallace, gave everybody a long list of terms. There must have been a couple hundred literary terms. And one of our ongoing project was we were supposed to find the definition of all these literary terms. Now, some of those were literary, like metaphor and simile and schenectady, and not schenectady, but synecdoche. But a number of those were also religious terms. I remember specifically, it was the first time that I'd seen the word, because I did not grow up going to church school, the Beatitudes. When I first saw it, I thought it was pronounced Beatitudes. So I thought it was like an Allen Ginsberg poem or something. The Sermon on the Mount, Prodigal Son. It was my first exposure to a lot of these terms, and I found it very valuable for the rest of my education. Giving up the ghost. That's one of the ways that when Jesus on Good Friday dies, it's called, in some editions of the Bible is called rendering up the spirit or giving up the ghost. The second coming, the apocalypse, the four horsemen, crucifixion, parable, betrayal, Messiah, all these terms, communion, the Last Supper. You really can't be a literate person in Western civilization if you don't know something about these Bible terms. And it'll even makes you a better Monty Python fan, because those guys were actually Holy Grail nerds. They really knew what they were talking about. And that's what makes the best satire. Knowing the subject makes you better able to satire it. But even other words, Billy Budd is a sacrificial. The rhyme of the ancient mariner and the symbol of the albatross. There's only so many plots in the world. John Donne, the famous poet, he began by love poetry to his paramours. And as he got older, and I think as his testosterone waned, he began to make love poems to God. T.S. Eliot came from a great Unitarian family. And he was really the first poet to move his imagery from those of Christianity into Vedanta and Buddhism. And one of the reasons why I'm convinced now T.S. Eliot was always considered so difficult to teach is that the teachers weren't sufficiently acquainted with either Christianity, Vedanta, or Buddhism. Because once you were, the wasteland becomes pretty darn explicit. Psychology. The Jungian archetypes. The whole idea that there are certain archetypes in the world, whether it comes in art or the way we exhibit ourselves to each other. The whole idea of the shadow, the temptation, the dying and the resurrecting God. Sure, it's also Ishtar and Osiris and Ahura Mazda and others, but Christ is the symbol that we have taken with us through this civilization. But also when you think of the symbols of Mary, how much for better or for worse the images and expectations of women in the society have been derived from the biblical ideas of Mary, the mother of Jesus, and Mary Magdalene. Psychology is also the realm of being wounded and healing from those wounds. Alcoholics Anonymous, higher power, it's God. Alcoholics Anonymous is derived from a Christian movement to keep upper middle class boys in England sober while they were at college. And it worked. And it became more broadly used. But that higher power is the Christian God. There's no getting around it. And there's also no getting around that Alcoholics Anonymous has been very important for very many people. It's about wounding and being healed. There's a pervasive Christian worldview in the United States, even amongst those of us who are not ardent believers. And this leads me to how to be an atheist on a higher level, or in Unitarian Universalist terms, a deeper level. Many atheists have rejected the old white man in a beard. Well, you know, that's not much of an accomplishment, and should have been done about the same time as one rejects Santa Claus. Though, frankly, I don't suggest rejecting Santa Claus. I think I'm four square behind believing in Santa Claus your whole life. But thinking of God as an old man in a white beard is something that needs to be left behind. You know, it's not really a great accomplishment to reject the God of Pat Robertson or Jerry Falwell or Ted Cruz. But rejecting the God of Thomas Merton or Martin Luther King or Dietrich Bonhoeffer or Pope Francis, how can any of us think that their idea of God is anything more than mature and significant and worthy of respect. So when you reject that God, do so with the worthiness and respect and intellectual and spiritual relationship that they have in their affirmation of that God. I find way too many atheists, Unitarian Universalists and otherwise, who I call fundamentalist atheists, because the God they're rejecting is the fundamentalist God. Now we see once again political interests co-opting Christian symbols, not for liberation, but to build their own power. And that there are way too many Christians allowing themselves to sell their cross for the mark of the beast. Now, how does one become an atheist on a deeper level? Well, there's that great chain of being, of creation, with man, and then God, at the very top. And man has dominion over all things, and God dominion over man. And I use the term man intentionally because that's what it said, and that's what is meant. When humanism came along in the 1930s and knocked God off the top of that pyramid, it left man as the head. It left everything else as is. It left the dynamics of tribalism, the dualism of sin and salvation, the lambs and the sheep, the saved and the damned, Eve as temptress or mother, all the psychology, all of the politics remained. It reminds me of the way Unitarians often change the words of hymns, but leave the music the same. Onward, Christian soldiers, becomes forward through the ages. It's still a march. In Unitarian Universalism in the 70s and the 80s, it was the humanists who fought the feminists most ardently. Why? Because they had the most to lose. Unitarian Universalist Christians, except in New England, were nothing more than an interesting anachronism. It was the humanist Unitarian male ministers who were the big deals in the denomination and had most to lose and least understanding of the dictates of feminism. So when feminists started making waves and picking up pagan, pre-Christian, pre-patriarchal, non-hierarchical approaches to spirituality and relating that to the universe, they were taking that pyramid and toppling it. And so this, to me, is a deeper form of atheism. It's also similar to, frankly, a Marxist dialectic. There was the divine right of kings, and the first wave of revolutions, especially the United States Revolution, knocked the king away and made propertied white men the top. And it was for another revolution, which has yet to happen, to turn that pyramid on its side. So the deeper atheist says, I not only reject the resurrection, I reject the sexism, the homophobia, the racism, and the empire building that way too often goes with it. I affirm the inherent dignity of every person and the interdependent web of which we are a part. Inside that web, I deeply affirm the teachings of Jesus and others and those who have suffered and died in oppression for the crime of teaching that every person has worth and dignity. And from within that interdependent web, I wish each of you a most happy Easter. Yeah, come on. Ain't easy doing this, you know? May we join together in our closing hymn, number 61. Understand that our sensuality is grounded in nature, in compassion, and in grace. This enables us to receive gifts that lead to everlasting life. For I saw that in our sensuality God is, for God is never out of the soul.